Well, thank you all for having me back. I'm glad that I have yet to scare you away. This is my third attempt at doing so, so we will see how it goes. As many of you know, I'm a doctoral student at Florida State. I spend a lot of time reading and writing and chasing toddlers around and all sorts of other fun things, but one of the main things I do is interpret. I really like interpretation. I like reading books. I like talking about them with other people. I like to read reviews of the movies I've watched, television shows I follow, or stand-up comedy specials I've seen. When a big sports game is on, I enjoy following the online commentary on social media along with the game. Recently, Abby and I went and saw Wonder Woman with a group of cadets from VMI, and we all stood around in the lobby afterwards talking about the film, what we thought of it, what it was missing, what it did well. There's a lot in the film to interpret. Now, similarly, I've been going to a weekly group scripture reading at Lexington Presbyterian Church recently called Lectio Divina. Some of my friends from there joined us this morning. It's an interesting practice where one person reads the scripture of the day, and then we sit. For 15 minutes, the room is silent, except for the gentle hum of the air conditioner and the scratching noises of some people's pens or pencils. Afterwards, the leader rings a small bell, and we discuss our thoughts on the passage. Different things jump out to different people, and different perspectives spark different conversations. Now, there's a couple of rules, sort of more guidelines. Nobody gets punished, really, for breaking them. Maybe it's not so much a rule, maybe it's just more of an agreement, that we're there primarily to listen to the scripture, to each other, to pay mindful attention of what stands out to us as we read a text, then think about why one thing or another stood out, and, if we wish, share our perspective with the group. We don't have to share our perspective, but we do listen earnestly to those who share their perspective. Now, the passage from this morning doesn't really lend itself to this kind of interpretive exercise. Jesus tells a parable in verses 1 through 9, in the verses in between that the lectionary cuts out, Jesus explains to disciples that he uses parables to communicate difficult passages in a more accessible way. And in verses 18 through 23, he spells out line by line the meaning of the parable he just told. Those seeds I talked about that fell on the path and got eaten by birds? You see, the birds represent the evil one. The seeds are knowledge, and people who don't understand knowledge are the path. They don't retain any knowledge. The seeds on the rocky ground, they still represent the word, but the word doesn't take root, get it, in their hearts, so it doesn't last. What was the next knowledge? I mean seed. Oh, right, the one that fell among thorns, and even if it grew, the thorns, which represent the cares of the world and the lure of wealth, doesn't let the knowledge produce anything in the heart of the dirt. I mean the person. Finally, the good soil is the good person who receives the good seed word knowledge, hears it, understands it, and does more good because of it than you would ever expect. Well, Jesus seems to have taken all the fun out of interpreting this passage for us. Didn't do preachers very many favors when he just kind of spells everything out. But who is he explaining the parable to, and why? Now, in verse 2, we see Jesus originally tells the parable to a crowd gathered by a lake. Jesus is standing in a boat as he delivers the message, and some commentaries think that he may have been pointing at somebody actually sowing a field in the distance, so everybody had something to look at that they were familiar with while he was giving this message. But in the section that's cut out of the lectionary passage, we see that Jesus only gives this interpretation to the disciples. Verses 10 and 11 say that, "Then the disciples came and asked him, 'Why do you speak to them in parables?' He answered, 'To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given.'" He isn't interpreting the verse for the benefits of all the listeners represented by the various types of soil. He's interpreting the verse for the benefit of the disciples, which seems to make them maybe the sowers. But what is a sower in this case? Well, it's somebody who sows, kind of. Last Christmas, I knitted my wife a scarf. Now, the previous winter, I had knitted several other scarves for my mother, my sister, my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law, and then finally got around to knitting one for my wife. I've also knitted a couple small baby blankets for Quinn when she was little, and a couple small scarves for Vivian. Now, between the scarves and the baby blankets, I've become moderately proficient at knitting rectangles. Now, I know the basics, and despite some flaws, and despite the use of oversized yarn with undersized needles, I knitted some things, so I am a knitter. Now, in addition to knitting, I also watch way too much basketball, specifically professional basketball, though I do enjoy college as well. But in professional basketball, and therefore in college, high school, even in middle schools now, there's a growing trend in the sport to shoot more three-pointers further away from the basket and worth more points. So players are practicing shooting the ball from further away. The figurehead of this new three-point shooting emphasis is a guard for the Golden State Warriors named Stephen Curry. Now, if we're only keeping track of the number of three-pointers made over one season, Stephen Curry, in the last couple years, has the first, second, third, and fifth best seasons in all of NBA history. Stephen Curry is a three-point shooter. But he is a three-point shooter in a very different way than I am a knitter. Our parable this morning starts with hosperon to sperein, Greek for the sower went out to sow. This is one analogy if we read it as similar to Tommy the knitter went out to knit, and it's something completely different if we read it similar to Stephen Curry went out to shoot the basketball. Now, this wasn't just somebody throwing seeds around haphazardly. It was someone who knew what they were doing. They had sowed seeds before, and yet, despite their experience, many of the seeds didn't result in growing fruit. The failure rate of the seeds is kind of astounding, but that's par for the course. There's knowing how to sow seeds proficiently, and there's knowing and accepting that there are elements that are out of your control. Even with the routine of spreading the seeds, tilling the field, fertilizing the soil, and caring for the crops, they won't all grow at the same rate and at the same time. These aren't things that can be controlled when sowing seeds, particularly in first century Palestine. As one of the children pointed out, you can't make the clouds water them for you either. Now, the sower in this case knew what could be controlled, knew what could be changed, and sowed his seeds and amended his sowing practices accordingly. The sower knew that they wouldn't all bear fruit, but if he sowed them as proficiently as possible, they would bear as much good fruit as possible. So on the one hand, there's the sower sowing, the disciples spreading the word, I think, is how this would line up with Jesus' interpretation. But there's another central assumption of this parable. Jesus assumes that the sower is only sowing good seed, and that the problem with the fruit it bears is due only to the quality of the soil or the presence of weeds. It would make sense for Jesus to assume that his disciples, sitting with him by a lake or in a boat, would be able to, at the very least, repeat the stories they had heard, and in so doing, sow good seeds or spread the good word. The master sower and now the disciples knew that a 100% return on their sowing was impossible. They also had to be sure that they were spreading good seed in an efficient manner. But what about those of us trying to figure things out a couple thousand years down the road? Who should we identify with in this passage? If we're the sowers, what kind of seeds are we sowing? How do we react when the message we put forth or the knowledge we share doesn't bear the fruit we think that it should? If we're listeners, if we're the ground, what are we hearing? How are we reacting to it? What sort of fruit are we bearing? Like I said earlier, I enjoy different perspectives, and I think our distance from the biblical text gives us an opportunity to learn how to be sowers, teachers, and guides. But it also instructs us to be listeners, to do our best to bear good fruit, to avoid seeing ourselves as the sole source of knowledge, and to inspect the seeds that we're sowing very carefully. This passage teaches us about responsibility, both of the listener and of the teacher, the one sharing the word and those hearing the word of the kingdom. Whether we find ourselves receiving the word and attempting to bear it out, or if we're speaking the word that others may hear, we would do well to follow the example of the experienced sower. Pay attention to what you're doing. Look for ways to improve. Identify what ought to be changed and what can be changed. And do your best to change the things you can.